at the National Institute for Student Ministries, we've discovered a new method of evangelism that is shaking the very foundation of our thinking. It may appear unorthodox, but frankly, we're shocked with the results. We're amazed at this revolutionary idea is specially designed to boost student evangelism.
Why did I want to be the evangelism linebacker? Well, let me put it to you like this.
Yeah, baby! Next time I'm going to hit you so hard you're going to flight, NASA's going to think I didn't launch a satellite!
You see, as a fish was created to swim in water, as a bird was created to fly, I was created to knock people out who don't evangelize.
The evangelism linebacker deals directly with a variety of students' fears associated with sharing their faith.
All right, it's all you. This house has got your name on it.
I'm not ready yet.
What makes you think I'm ready, though?
Fear of rejection, for example.
Let me talk to you about fear. Fourth and one, Jerry Rice, what you gonna do? That don't compare to fourth and one in eternity.
It doesn't matter who rejects us because we're always accepted by Christ.
God loves you. Get off the flow and go door to door.
Can we talk to you for a minute?
I'm a lover, not a fighter, baby.
He loves you, but it might hurt.
Sometimes I'll blow you up, but it's because I love you.
Yeah, but just because I'm a Christian doesn't mean I need to be out sharing my faith. I mean...
Ah! Don't you run from me! You can't escape my grasp! D-Gray will throw you in the trash!
Thanks to the evangelism linebacker, campus evangelism nationwide is up 87%.
Hey, I can't go to the outreach today. I just got some more important things I gotta do. Uh-huh. Hey, man, give me a break. I went to church on Sunday. I gotta go.
Selfishness! The world needs a message! For God to love the world, He wants to communicate it through you! If you procrastinate, you will open up the gate to a beatdown! Give me that phone, boy!
When I see selfishness, it is my job to blow them up. That's what I do. I blow them up so that they can get their eyes off of self and look at Christ, the prize.
What's up, baby girl? Nah, I'm busy.
We're intrigued, as the linebacker is particularly effective in infiltrating centers of cultural and intellectual exchange.
Here you go. Here's your double cappuccino latte mocha with a twist. Not too hot, not too cold. Perfect for you.
Yeah, but anyway, man, did you hear that talk from that guy the other night?
Oh, I know. Like, we were supposed to be sharing our faith in our coffee shop.
Whoa! Whoa! Shut out in the coffee shop, baby! You next!
It's unlikely that the recent decline in coffee sales has anything to do with our program.
Pride comes before the fall. That's Old Testament! Testament, you know this.
Thanks for the coffee, Darren.
Hey, you're welcome. Have a nice day. Your mama raised you better than this boy. Don't let me blow you up no more.
You see, I think it's fitting because when people have pride, if they're too prideful to share their faith, what I do is I knocks the pride out of them. What I would like to communicate to my brothers and sisters is this. When you least expect it, around the corner, perhaps even under your bed, I can be in a phone line. I can be everywhere. And just know that I'm always watching, ready to lay the boom on you, baby. Booyah!
Ouch. Are you ready for game day?
So you know what's waiting for you if you don't do what we taught you this weekend. There are three other people I wanted to say thank you to before we get really rolling. There are three people who put in countless hours making videos. Bryce didn't go to bed till 5 o'clock this morning. I don't even know. I think he's probably passed out in the back hall somewhere here. Oh, he's asleep. Wake up. Bryce did all of our video footage. Mario helped him capture some stuff, but Bryce was up. He called me at Starbucks at 11:30. He goes, hey, come up to Starbucks real quick. I'm like, what? Because 11:30 is not too late. But he was all hopped up on 5-hour energy drink also. Bryce put in a lot of time. Lindsay and Karen. Lindsay, my intern, and my wife Karen, who's somewhere around here. There she is. I haven't slept much either. They sorted every one of your shirts and put your names on them. They went through and counted loaves of bread in a loaf and then separated them out to make sure that there was the right amount of mayonnaise and bread and lunch meat. Chuck, there was lunch meat in that bag that you left out overnight. The reality is, oh, Gary did it. The reality is, the three of them, along with the rest of the adults that did this weekend, really, they made the difference. They made this weekend what it was. And students, I want you to know that everyone, the adults we recognize, and especially Bryce and Karen and Lindsay, you guys need to tell them thank you and be appreciative of what was done for you. They made sure, because some of you didn't sign up till Thursday of D-Now, and they went through and juggled, oh, this person could probably wear this size, so if we move this size over here and this size over here and then this size over here, they'll get a t-shirt. So make sure you say thank you and you be appreciative. And yeah, we can tell them we're thankful. I don't know why, when it comes to evangelism, we kind of laugh that there's a guy on the screen blowing people up for not sharing their faith. I think we'd probably be more motivated if he were real or true. You know, if he came in the back door right now and started making his way through the crowd, there'd be a sense of urgency. And this is what we talked about this weekend with our students, is this sense of urgency, the sense of we are called to join in a work that's been going on for thousands of years. One of the values that we teach our students, one of the values that we try to live our life by, is that we're involved in an ancient work. That Christianity, the Heights Fellowship, what we do here and what we believe is nothing new to our culture. It's something that has been being shared and spread around the globe for thousands of years, and you have the opportunity to join in that mission, which is kind of cool. And we also share things like, if you love people, you'll go out and you'll share your faith with them. Or if you just feel bad enough for them or want to make their life better. And so there's all these things that we lay on people's lives about why they ought to be sharing. It's an ancient work. It's a great thing. It's something that Christ is involved in and is passionate about. So we should be, if we love him and da-da-da-da-da. I want to look at a passage this morning and listen, we're not going to be long. We're going to look at about 12 verses, but we're going to focus on one word. And you can ask the band in the first service. I said I wouldn't be long, and so they went out after they did, and they were getting coffee, and I said, here comes the band, and Thomas didn't even make it in until the middle of the first song. So it's really, I don't want to make this into something bigger than it is. Okay, well, let's look at Luke chapter 10. I'm going to start with verse 1. It's a passage that as we read this, you're going to go, oh yeah, I'm familiar with this. And there are all kinds of things we look at in this passage. We look at the content of the message. We look at the method of delivery. We look at the people that are connected with the gospel. There's all kinds of things, but I think that we miss the single most important part of this passage, and it's one simple word. We'll get to it in a second. Luke chapter 10, I'm going to read in verse 1. We'll just break it down, come back to that one word, and we're out. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. Our curriculum this weekend with our students has been called Saturate. And it's the idea that we live in a culture that needs to have a gospel presence, a good news presence, the presence of Christ filling it. Webster's defines saturate as to satisfy or to fill to the point of permeation and to just overwhelm it to the point that it can't receive anymore. You'd say water is saturated when it can't receive any more salt. It's completely saturated with salt. It won't take any more. I dare say we live in a culture that can't take any more Jesus. And so our goal and our push this weekend with our students and our push this weekend for you, for me, is to figure out how do we fill our culture full of Jesus. How do we saturate the world we live in? And I love the way Webster's defined saturate in the simple, very first one. It says to satisfy. Has our culture accomplished a sense of being satisfied by Jesus? He told them, verse 2, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest field. We miss this because we're no longer as largely an agrarian society. For most of us, the vegetables we eat or the food we eat, we go to the store and we buy it. We don't catch the whole things can spoil if they're not cared for right. We don't catch the whole that as Jesus and his disciples are walking down the road, that he points at a field that's ready for harvesting. As a matter of fact, he does this again in John chapter 4. He says, why do you guys say 4 more months and then the harvest? Look, the field is ripe. The implication is because the field is ripe, the harvest is ready now. And what happens to harvest that's not harvested when it's ready? We lose it. And so Jesus is telling them, it's time, right now, to be doing what I'm about to tell you to do. And he says, go. I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. There's doubtful that you'll have a safe return from this mission. Our students will hear me say it all the time. We've been called to join God in this mission to save the universe one planet at a time, starting with Earth. And your safe return is doubtful. Listen, in a big scheme kind of way, this is what God has called us to. And he never promised it would be sweet by and by or easy living or your wealth and riches and prosperity here in this life. Jesus said, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. What happens to lambs when they wander into the wolf pack? Where's the wolf pack? I heard the wolf pack was over here this morning. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. I should be watching those movies at D-Now. What happens to the lambs? It's dangerous. It might cost them their lives. Listen, this isn't a mission for the faint heart. This is a special operation. This is an elite fighting force that Christ is calling to take back the world that he died to redeem. It's not going to be easy. He says, do not take a purse or a bag or sandals. Do not greet anyone on the road. Now, where's he sending them? We found out a few verses earlier. He's sending them out to other towns. And you know what he's telling them? This is too important even to take the time to go home and pack. I'm sending you right now. You're to go. You don't have time to go get sandals, extra money. And then he says in verse 5, when you enter a house, first say peace to this house. If a man of peace is there, your peace will rest on him. If not, it will return to you. Stay in the house eating and drinking whatever they give you, for the worker deserves his wages. Do not move around from house to house. This is significant for two reasons. He's saying find people you can invest in. Paul told Timothy this. Find those men that you can teach that will turn around and teach others. It's important that we invest ourselves so that we multiply. It's important that we find people and spend. But think about the culture he's talking to. Eat whatever they put in front of you, he says to a bunch of Jewish people. There are little things of conscience and personal like and dislike that keep us from permeating, from saturating the culture with the gospel. Well, I don't like cigarette smoke. But if Jesus said, I want you to go over there and sit by that person and share with them, oh, but they look different. Or, I don't like that kind of music. The people he's speaking to, their righteousness before God was determined by the food they ate. And Jesus said, don't worry about the food anymore. There's a more important mission than you making sure that you're eating by the dietary laws. When you enter a house where you can speak the gospel, you enter that house and you speak the gospel. Good news. There, he tells them to go in and say, the kingdom of heaven is near. The kingdom of God is near you. The Jewish nation was waiting for a Messiah to come redeem Israel and lead them back to the prosperity as God's people. And so when they walk into the house and say, the kingdom of God is near, this is good news. And our mission remains the same today, to walk into the lives of people regardless of our differences, our likes, our dislikes, and speak, I've got good news for you. God is near you. That's the mission. And it's that simple. He goes on to talk about how some people will accept it and some people won't. Listen, it's not up to you. It's not up to you to decide who gets it and who doesn't. It's up to you to spread the seed. But the one word, I mean, we've looked at the content, the crowd, the delivery. We've looked at the need for it, how it culturally translates. But there's one word that this all hinges on. If you take this one word out of what we're talking about, none of it happens. It's the very first word in verse 3. Jesus says, go. He doesn't say, go home and sit in comfort. He doesn't say, go back to a cushy job. We all know what he's calling us to. And let's just be real honest. There's a word that the Bible uses repetitively for disobedience or rebellion against God. It's the little three-letter word. What is that word? Say it again. Sin. So when we disobey, and Jesus commanded us to go. And so if we don't, it's Now think about this. Now, God, I want you to bless my career. I want you to bless my family. God, I want you to help me raise children that know you and love you and are godly children. Well, I want you to go. Well, I'm not going, but I want you to bless me. At what point do we not get it that God, at our point of disobedience, stops abiding with us? Now, he doesn't take your salvation away. That's not what I'm saying. But he stops in his journey with us, and he waits at the point of disobedience for us to return to where he is. He doesn't come to us and say, oh, you're right after all. You didn't really have to go. I had it all wrong. I meant one of those big name evangelists or a professional staff guy. You're just an ordinary Joe that's just barely getting by. It's okay for you to not go. There's nobody you know that needs me. Bottom line, whether it's about loving people, whether it's about being impressed by their need, whether it's just I feel like I ought to help them, it's a matter of obedience or disobedience, and that's all this is. And students, we've spent 5 teaching sessions with you. Your leaders were supposed to, and I'd like you to tell me if they didn't. We spent hour after hour with you talking about all of this to come down to this one moment. Will you go? Will you go back to your school tomorrow and make it a different place? Will you saturate it with the gospel? It's great if you do it because you love your friends. It's great if you do it because you have the answer. It's great if you do it because I told you to, which usually doesn't work for you guys. But bottom line is, will you be obedient? In church, how can we ask our students to be obedient, to invest all this time and effort into them being able to be obedient and not model obedience for them to see? These are your kids. And unfortunately, in a couple hours a week, I can't undo your parenting. Believe me, I've tried. Your kids, more than ever, need to see you living a life that is obediently following Christ. Your students need to see you going into your workplace and sharing your faith. They need to see you having friends over for dinner because there's something more important than just watching the Cowboys game that you need to share with them. And we can't ask our hope for this next generation to rest on people who can't see the model set for them by adults. And so the challenge to you is the same. Will you be obedient? Will you go? It's that simple. I can't think of a more awkward time in my life than 7th and 8th grade. Those of you that survived it, I see people all over the room going, oh my gosh. I've often said that high school was cool. I spent too much time there. But, and you could probably pay me to go back to some of my high school days. A lot of money, but you could. But there is no amount of money that you could give me to make me go back to junior high. It was an aromatic fiasco of poor social skills. It was horrible. And Nathan's back there going, it still is. Trust me, it still is. I can't think of a more awkward time in my life socially. A time in my life where I wouldn't want anybody really noticing me. And I want to wrap up with something. I just want to leave you guys with an image. The band's going to come back up here in just a minute. And they're going to follow this video that I want to show you that our 8th grade guys made this weekend. They made it in just a few hours. Their leader, Chuck, is a media guy, and he's spectacular. He's got his Mac and his iPad and all that. Anyway, I'm jealous, and I stole your stuff while you were in here. But they made this video, and it's 8th grade boys. And the imagery of what they're doing here in Lubbock should inspire you to obedience. Will you go? Let's pray. God, keep it simple for us because we need it that way sometimes. Just give us the opportunity this morning to say yes or no.
Look down from a broken sky. Traced out by the city lights. My world from a mile high. Best seat in the house tonight. Touchdown in the cold black top. Hold on for the sudden stop. Breathe in the familiar shock of confusion and chaos. those people going somewhere? Why have I never cared? Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. Yeah. Yeah.
Seeing people, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without shepherd. And he said to disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest.
There's a man just to right, black suit and a bright red tie. Too ashamed to tell his wife he's out of work, he's buying time.
Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore beseech the Lord the harvest to send out workers to his harvest.
Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. Yeah. 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 I've been here a million times, a couple of million.
Seeing the people, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest.
Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. Give me your eyes, Lord. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your heart for the brokenhearted. Yeah.